8. Winston Spencer took his pen to paper to tally his ill-gotten gains. The 3% commission on the original $200 million sale of the Golden Buddha was $6 million. This was hardly a small sum. In fact, it was just over 5 times Spencer's income last year, but it was a drop in the bucket compared to the money he was about to collect for selling it again. In the first place, against the $6 million commission check, he had the cost of the decoy. The fabricators in Thailand had charged nearly $1 million for that. In the second place, the company he'd hired in Geneva to transport the Golden Buddha to Macau and provide armored car service to Amah had charged too much, a flat fee of $1 million for their services. While Spencer had quoted the billionaire a cost of 1/10 of that so as not to arouse suspicion. Bribes now and in the next few days, when Spencer was planning to transport the original out of Macau and into the United States, would run him another $1 million or so. As a result, right at this instant, for all practical purposes, Spencer was broke. The art dealer had tapped all his available savings and business lines of credit to fund his nefarious operation. If he didn't have the commission check lying before him on the table, he'd be in trouble. If Spencer had not been completely certain he had a buyer for the Golden Buddha, he might be worried. Tearing the slip of paper from the pad, he tore the note into tiny pieces, tossed the pieces in the toilet, and flushed. Then he poured himself half a glass of scotch to calm his trembling hands. It had taken Spencer a lifetime to build his reputation, and if his crime was known, it would be gone in seconds. Money and gold can make men do strange things. 3/4 of the way across the globe and 16 time zones distant, it was almost midnight, and the Silicon Valley software billionaire was passing his time making changes to his newest yacht. The blueprints for the massive 350-foot-long vessel had been created on a computer, designed on a computer, and refined on a computer. Each individual piece could be highlighted and changed, all the way down to the screws that attached the 30 toilets to the deck. Right now, the billionaire was playing around with the furnishings and upholstery, and his ego was running rampant. The computer would generate a full-bodied hologram of him to welcome guests to the main deck salon, and that had been a cool touch. But at this instant, he was deciding what font would be best for his initials, which were to be sewn into the fabric on all the couches and chairs. A few years ago, he'd bought himself a minor British title that had come complete with a coat of arms, so he inserted the script he'd selected into the emblem, then overlaid that onto the fabric. "A cameo of my face might look better," he thought, as he stared at the royal crest. "Then people could sit on my face." The idea brought a smile. He was still smiling when his Philippine houseboy entered the room. "Master," he said slowly, "I'm sorry to bother you, but you have a long-distance telephone call from overseas."
"Did they say their name?" he asked.
"He said he was a friend of the Fat Golden One," the man said.
"Put him through," the billionaire said, smiling. "At once."
The time was just before 4 PM in Macau, and while he waited for the software billionaire to come online, Spencer was fiddling with a voice alteration device that he had placed over his satellite telephone. He had placed a new battery in the device, and the tiny light was blinking green. But still, he questioned if the scrambler would work as advertised.
"Yo," the billionaire said as he came on the line. "What do you got for me?"
"Are you still interested in owning the Golden Buddha?"
a mechanical-sounding voice asked.
"Sure,"
the billionaire said. At the same time, he input commands into the computer hooked to his telephone to counter the effects of the scrambler.
"But not at $200 million.
"I was thinking..."
The man's voice was scrambled, but then the computer did its magic, and the voice cleared.
"A price of $100 million.
A British accent, the software billionaire thought. Talbot had told him a British dealer had made the successful bid for the Buddha, and maybe he had acquired it for a British collector, but that made no sense. No one would buy something for $200 million, only to offer it a few days later for half that. The dealer must have pulled the old switcheroo, or he was offering a fake.
"How do I know what you're offering is real?"
the software billionaire asked.
Do you have someone who can date gold?
Spencer asked. I can find someone, the billionaire said.
Then I'll send you a sliver of metal, along with a videotape of me removing it from the bottom of the artifact. The gold used in the Buddha was mined in...
I know the history, the billionaire said, cutting him off. How are you going to send the sample?
I'll FedEx it this evening, Spencer said.
The billionaire reeled off an address, then asked, If it checks out, in what form will you want payment?
I'll accept a wire transfer of American dollars to an account I'll specify at the time of the transfer, Spencer said.
Sounds reasonable, the billionaire said. I'll set it up tonight. Yeah, one more thing, though, the billionaire added. I just hope you're better at stealing than you are at picking electronics. Your choice in voice alteration equipment is second rate. Your accent is as British as beans on toast. And that gives me a pretty good idea of who you are. Spencer stared at the flashing green light in disgust, but said nothing. So, just remember, the billionaire finished, if you try and screw me, I can get real unpleasant. Full stop, Hanley ordered. The Oregon had crossed the outer edge of the harbor just after 11 a.m. and picked up the pilot. Several containerized ships leaving port had slowed their progress, and the trip to a mooring buoy in the water just off the main portion of the port had required most of the next hour. The time was just before noon when the vessel was finally secured. Cabrillo stood next to Hanley at the helm and stared at the city which encircled the harbor. The pilot had just left, and he watched the stern of the boat retreating. "You don't think he noticed anything unusual?" Cabrillo asked. I think we're okay, Hanley answered. The corporation's previous ship, the Oregon One, had been involved in a sea battle off Hong Kong a few years before, which had resulted in them sinking the Chinese Navy vessel Chengdu. If the Chinese officials figured out this was the same crew that had sunk their multi-million-dollar destroyer, they'd all be hung as spies. Truett arranged for us to receive our cover cargo the day after tomorrow, Cabrillo said, scanning the sheet of paper on a clipboard that listed the operational plans. You're going to love this. It's a load of fireworks, bound for Cabo San Lucas. The Oregon, delivering fireworks, Hanley said quietly. It seems so fitting. The executive jet terminal in Honolulu was plush without being ostentatious. It was cool inside, the air conditioning maintaining an even 70 degrees. The smoked glass windows gave the lobby a clear view of the runways, and Langston Overholt IV passed the time watching a series of private jets appear in the night sky and then touch down and taxi over to the refueling area near private hangars. Overholt never saw the passengers of the jets. They were either met by limousines or large black SUVs on the tarmac, then transferred to their locations, or stayed aboard while the jets were refueled and continued on their journeys. Pilots or co-pilots came and went, stopping for weather briefings, to use the restrooms, to grab a cup of coffee or a pastry from a pantry to the side of the lobby. But for the most part, it was quiet in the mid-evening lull. Overholt rose from the couch, walked over to the pantry and poured a cup of coffee, then was removing a banana from a fruit basket on the table when his telephone vibrated. Overholt, he said quietly.
Sir,
a voice a few thousand miles away said steadily.
Tracking reports the target on final approach.
Thank you, Overholt said as he disconnected. Then he peeled the banana, ate it, and walked over to the flight desk. Taking a leather badge cover from the breast pocket of his suit, he flipped it open and handed it to the clerk. The man quickly scanned the Golden Eagle, then perused the ID card showing Overholt's picture and title. Yes, sir, the clerk said. I need to talk to the party on the Falcon you have inbound for landing. The man nodded and reached for a portable radio on his belt. I'll notify the ramp and call for a golf cart. Is there anything else you need? Overholt turned and stared out the window. The light mist was turning to rain. Do you have an umbrella I can borrow? The clerk was on the radio calling out to the ramp attendants and nodded at Overholt's request. "You can use mine," the clerk said, reaching under the counter and handing it across the desk. Overholt slipped his hand in his trouser pocket and removed a money clip, then peeled off a 50. "The CIA would like to buy you dinner tonight," he said, smiling. "Is this when you say you were never here?" the clerk said, smiling in turn. "Something like that," Overholt nodded. The man pointed to the doors. "Your golf cart is here." Outside the window, the landing lights on the Falcon jet reflected off the light rain and wet surface as it lowered onto the runway with a chirp from the tires. A truck with a flashing light bar mounted on the roof raced down an access road in hot pursuit. The truck would lead the jet to the spot for refueling. Then Overholt could board and ask the Dalai Lama if he was ready for the journey.